Hello and welcome to Little Africa News. My name is Mona Davids and I am the founder of Little Africa News, New York Voice News, and Real Talk with Mona Davids. So as you all know, we have the June primaries coming up and we've been doing our Meet the Candidate interview series. And today's candidate that we're interviewing is our public advocate, Jumani Williams, who is running for re-election next month in our primaries. And Jumani, welcome to Little African News. Thank you so very much for joining us. And I know probably all of our readers know who you are, but you know, please just still tell us about yourself and you know why you're running again for public advocate.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Mona, for everything you do around these issues, particularly around African population, making sure Black immigrants are not forgotten. Even when we disagree, I appreciate the push and the drive to make sure that everybody has what they need. So I appreciate that. I don't assume that everybody knows who I am, except hopefully my mom and my wife. So I'm happy to say a little bit about myself. Peace and blessings to everyone. Love and light to you all. As mentioned, I'm the current public advocate running for re-election. I am a first-generation American. My parents came from a small trial in the state of Grenada, Caribbean, Petit Martinique, educated in a New York City public school system from preschool to master's. I am a community organizer by training. I always make sure to tell folks it was long before Barack Obama, so no one had any idea what that was. And my mother asked me to please get a real job. Trying to explain to a Caribbean mother what a community organizer is was interesting. I had to tell her it was a real job. That is a true story. And so I did community organizing. I ran some nonprofits and I ran for city council. Ended up running against an incumbent, actually, and everyone told me it was kind of crazy for even trying. So I'm going to do it anyway. The Most High lined everything up. I've been trying to cause as much trouble as possible since that time. Did a couple of runs and ran for public advocate and citywide elected official now. You know, I was told I had to choose between being an activist or being an elected official. I said, I don't think I do. The best elected officials are activists. And so I refuse to choose between those two. So what I'm most proud of is the ability to have concrete achievements. Even as public advocate, we've passed more pieces of legislation than all the previous public advocates combined. I wanted to show that you can do public service and electoral politics a little differently and still be able to achieve. You know, we're proud that we've been reached out to by different cities who try to emulate what they see here. We've testified in other city councils because they've been impressed about what our office has been able to achieve. And where we are right now in this city, what we're facing from the White House and unfortunately from City Hall, we have to make sure we have an independent and strong public advocate. So hoping that all the viewers would support me once again to do the job that is needed, particularly in the space that we're in.
Thank you. So, I mean, Jumani, I want to jump on two things, but yes, you haven't changed because I've known you for years now. You haven't changed. So what you're doing as public advocate, like you said, you did as city council member, your activism, and I will give credit where credit is due. Whenever we parents needed you to be out there with us, you were out there with us. So I want to do just like a quick down memory lane. So let's see. I want to show the first image. Let's see. All right. Okay. So you see, okay, so Jumani, I have to say, let me just say, you and I look exactly the same, except that's what I'm saying, and I'm sticking with it.
I'm with it. I'm rocking with you on that, particularly the older I get. I'm rocking with that even more and more.
Yeah. So, you know, for our viewers, yes, that's me. My hairstyle is just different. And that's Jumani supporting parents, and of course, also at that time, Councilman Bill de Blasio. So it was Councilman Jumani Williams and Councilman Bill de Blasio. And
can I just say something? Speaking of the hit of hair, my 3-year-old, and I'm still recovering. When I, you know, when I don't have the style and I just comb it out, the sunlight is not my friend. Light is not my friend on my hair. My 3-year-old asked me, "Daddy, why is your hair broken?" I'm still recovering from that statement. That was 3 days ago. I'm dealing with that.
Yes. That's kids. And that's 3-year-olds.
My word.
No, yeah. Folks. And then I wanted to show the second image. Another one. Again, we look exactly the same. Granted, these are 2009, 2010. Yes, we look exactly the same 14 years later, just different hairstyles.
That's correct. But,
you know, it's just funny. And I just saw the last final photo. Where is it? And then now you can see you over there next to Nick Perry. Or, you know, our now
taking
former.
Way back.
Yeah. No. My point is that, you know, we can agree to disagree on many things, but I have to give credit where credit is due.
And I appreciate that.
You've been there. So, so I want to talk now about, let's pivot to the role of the public advocate and how really important the public advocate, because people don't know that the public advocate actually is second in line to the mayor.
Like, yeah, I think more people know now than they did before, unfortunately, because of this last year. There was a few times in particular where I had a lot of friends blowing up my phone. They seemed to disappear a little bit. I think most people now know that the public advocate is second in line if something happens, which of course is extremely important. And you want to make sure you have somebody there that's ready to take the position if it's needed. Hopefully it's not, because if it's needed, that means something went wrong and something is not going right either which way. You also have a lot of other powers that you want to use. And the one we've used the most is around legislation and policy. We can introduce legislation, which we have. Again, passing more than all the public advocates combined on a whole range of issues, from helping small homeowners to Black maternal health. It is a tool that we use a lot. And where possible, we use our ability to sue. It's interesting to hear some of the folks who are running discussing how they're going to use the office. But they're speaking in ways that we actually don't have the power to do, unfortunately. But we're hoping to strengthen the office in ways moving forward. It's one of the things that with some of the charter commissions, we're going to ask to be able to strengthen the office even more. It was strengthened in the last charter commission due to some advocacy we did, and we're going to do it again. But, you know, we use all the tools that we can to make sure this city is moving in the right direction for everyone. It's not to be a friend or foe to any mayor or elected, but I would say you have to be able to stand up and say, this is wrong, or is this another job for you? So I will tell you that it's been difficult for me to see our brother mayor in the quagmire that he's in, as a Black man, as a citywide to another Black man, as a citywide elected official, even more powerful. It's just been tough. But at some point, you have to stand up and call it for what it is. And if you cannot say that we need a different mayor at this moment in time, particularly for everything we're going through, then this is not the job for you, because it is very evident that unfortunately our mayor has not been able to step up to the moment to cause a sense of reassurance that we have someone who's going to at least use all the tools that he has. And so the rest of us are doing the best that we can to stand in the gap.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a rough few months, 6 months, 8 months. But it definitely put the public advocate, or the office of the public advocate, in the spotlight. I think at least there's something educational happened, because now, you know, people are like, oh, okay, so it's not a deputy mayor that would become mayor if something bad happens. It's the public advocate, according to the city charter. So, like you said, you know, as public advocate, you've passed the most legislation in this role compared to previous public advocates. So is there any legislation that you'd like to highlight or talk about that like you've been extremely, really proud of making it happen?
No, there's been a lot. You know, we've done some to assist, you know, with tenants. We try to strengthen our worst landlord list. We've even passed tax relief for some of our small homeowners during the pandemic. One of the biggest ones, probably the racial impact study. And so whenever a rezoning happens in the city now, there has to be an impact study in the review to see how it's going to impact the folks who've been living there for a very long time. So very proud of that, because as people have seen, there's rezonings that are happening. We hear about the big ones, but there are small ones that happen daily. And some of the rezonings have harmed our housing market for people who need the assistance the most. And it was tiring to see that time and time again. So, you know, I'm really proud of being able to pass that and have another tool to try to make sure that we have the housing that we need. And we have it for the people who made these neighborhoods what they are, why people want to move here in the first place. So we're very, very excited about that, among many.
Okay. I just want to touch on, because like you said, you know, it's these, this is what makes New York who it is, and these neighborhoods and the people, the communities in these neighborhoods. I'm really curious, what are your thoughts about the high number of outward migration out of New York City? Like, we know, like, New York State has the highest number of outward migration in New York City. Families are leaving New York City because they're saying it's not affordable for many families. That's like one of the top reasons. So granted, you know, you're the public advocate, but you're also an activist. And I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on something like that? And what can elected officials, including you as the public advocate, because you can introduce legislation, what else can be done to keep families in New York City?
You know, it's interesting, you know, like you, I try to keep it a buck as much as possible. So I'm going to be real funky here. I'm going to keep it 100%. We have more Black and brown leadership than we've ever had on a city, state, and federal level, which is obviously a hand clap moment because a lot of people worked for that. But I keep telling folks, don't confuse Black and brown persons doing better with Black and brown people doing better. Because while we got elevated into these positions, the communities we came from haven't necessarily felt the results of that. And so over 20 years, while people like myself got elected, by the way, I want to keep my job and I want to lose it. I want to be 100% sure or clear about that. But while people like me have been honored to be in these positions, 200,000 Black New York City residents had to leave here because they couldn't afford to stay. Now, public safety is a real big issue and we should address that. There's real harm being done. We should put it in context. But the number one reason that people leave is because they can't afford it. And so we have been pushing, and I wish people would have responded before it became a crisis, for things that would make it more affordable. Housing is one of the top ones. So I wish we can just pass legislation and get it done. But when you have a mayor who assigns people to the Rent Guidelines Board that for 2 years in a row gets the highest rent increase that we've had in 20 years, it's a problem. And we're going to have another rent increase. When we have the Democratic elite who will not join those of us who are saying, listen, we have to raise revenue from the wealthiest among us because it's a civic duty, not as a punishment, but we can't make it less affordable. And one of the ways that we can provide the healthcare, provide the childcare that people need is raising revenue, not cutting services. But when we have the Democratic elite not supporting that, it's a problem. And so it's been frustrating for me because I believe the Democratic leadership had a large part to play of why we have Donald Trump. Now, obviously, what they push and, the God's honest truth is, and we can talk about it from the time, Mona, some of us drank some of that orange Kool-Aid. You know what I'm saying? We drank it because we thought it was going to happen to other people, not us. That's a whole nother thing. but hopefully we learned some lessons. But the Democratic leadership never leaned into the thing that people were saying was the problem. They said they were worried about public safety. They said they couldn't afford to live here. And we didn't respond to that. We just, we brought up other issues. And we have the answers to those issues if we lean into it. But instead, the leadership actually pushed away people who were touting these as a problem and putting forward solutions. And so hopefully we lean into that now because we have solutions to that if we're not worried about just making sure that our elite stays elite and that our wealthy stays wealthy. And that's some of the problems that we've had. And as you know, that's a space that I've always come from, continue to come from. Sometimes I'm surprised I'm a citywide elected official speaking the way I do. I'm happy that I am. I'm proud of it. But I really think the Democratic Party has to learn some lessons here because there are very many things that we can do to address affordability, to address housing as a crisis. And we're not doing it. The last thing I say now, you know, I always try to be as honest again. With it, when it comes to housing, I ask people three questions, and I'll ask you and the people who are listening at home, you can participate. How many people think believe that homelessness and housing are one of the biggest issues that we have to address? People raise their hand. How many people believe that to address that issue appropriately, we have to have housing at a price point that people can afford? Raise their hand, raise their hand. Now, how many people want to live next to a taller building? So, wherever you ask those three questions, from the most Republican part of New York City to the most Democratic part of New York City, usually the answer is yes, yes, no. Yep. And I mention that because sometimes we know what part of the answer is, but it's difficult to get it done. So there's no housing plan that is real without preservation being at least 60% or more of it. You got to preserve what we have. And of course, we have to add home ownership to any plan. But we do have to build. And we have to make sure if we're going to ask people to give up density, it's what they could afford, not what we're seeing right now. But to that point, it's very difficult to build because no one wants to be in a denser community, which I understand. But if we look the way we did 100 years from now, Mona, you and I probably wouldn't be here. And if we look the same way we do in 100 years, our children won't be here. So we have to have conversations about where we can protect communities. And in exchange for that, where can we give up some density? But that density has to be at a rate that's affordable for the people who need it the most.
Okay. Another, you know, what I would call something, you know, in your toolbox as public advocate that you mentioned is that you can sue, right? The public advocate has the ability also to file lawsuits, right? Would you consider, say, for example, recently the Trump administration did a clawback on some funds that were allocated to the city? Like, do you see a role in the public advocate? Do you see a public advocate getting involved in lawsuits such as that? Or, like, what are some of the lawsuits that you would get involved with or that you would file or have filed?
So first is what we actually have the power to do. And it's interesting when I hear folks who may not have done as much research for the position as they're trying to get the position, speaking about things without actually understanding the real world applications. I think Tish James, who is a previous public advocate, is a magnificent attorney. And I hope everybody agrees with that. I don't know that somebody else would do a better job. What has happened since Mark Green, who used this tool the best, judges have slowly taken away our standing to do that. And so Tish James did a great job in trying to do that and actually move the ball where she could. And we did the best to learn from what she did to make sure that we can carry it further. But if you remember, and I'm surprised people don't do the basic research, folks who are running, the governor, Kathy Hochul, who said she was going to do some things to curb what was happening in the mayoral office, one of the things she wanted to do was make sure that some of the other citywide, including public advocate, had standing to sue. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And so it's very the specific places where we can do this. You also don't want to put out frivolous lawsuits, because the more you do that, the more it weakens the office. So you can't just jump and sue on behalf of the city. You can do be creative and sign on to amicus briefs, try to pair up with other folks who are doing it. So we are looking for ways to do that, and we have. We've actually won some cases already. One was strengthening the office and some of the powers that we have that were not tested, that it came when it came to our ability to have a conversation as a part of the budget. The mayor administration tried to ignore our powers, and in court, it was decided that we actually do have that power. I think one that's more germane to people listening, we won a case, an amicus brief, and we actually brought that one together with someone, actually. We won a case to return some bus services that were summarily just canceled. And so we use that tool whenever we can. It's a very good tool. Unfortunately, I want it to be strengthened. And, you know, I applaud Sustain for what she did. And I'm hoping people who are running will do some research, because what you don't want to do is tell people we can do things that we can't. And we should just use the tools that we have.
Okay. So is that like one of the reasons why when the mayor does his budget briefing, it's like he briefs the speaker, he briefs the comptroller, and he briefs the public advocate?
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, courtesy, which I appreciate in its tradition. We also have a role to play at the end of the budget. We have to sign off on some things they're going to do with the taxes, and we have to sign that off. And it's usually something they call ministerial, which kind of gets boring, but it was really, is it something that we have to do, or we can just do? And we argued that it was something that we have to do and that the budget can't fully go forward unless we do it. And the court decided in one part that they simply can't ignore what we have to sign off on. And so we're very proud of that, because before that, there was no court decision on that. And so, you know, I'm glad that the tradition is kept. I'm glad that we have shown that there's an additional power so that we have to be part of the conversation. I'm also happy that we have someone like Speaker Adrian Adams, who has used the power that she has had to help push back on some of the worst cuts that were being offered by this mayor at this time.
Yeah, it's really amazing that right now it's the best budget ever, and everything that anybody ever wanted, we're now getting in this budget.
Isn't that something?
You know, like,
isn't that something?
Best budget, you know. Anyway, don't even get me started on
that. But I'm just gonna say, you're gonna cut stuff. We tell you not to cut, then you're gonna restore it, and you want to be celebrated. But you know what I mean? That's.
The best budget ever. Everyone is getting what they want in this budget and more. So
I wonder why. Why do you think that is, Mona?
I don't know. He just decided to do it this year. You know,
what a coincidence.
Yeah, that's definitely what it is. So, just my last question is, like, the public advocate's office. You know, just give some information about. Like, how many people does the public advocate have on staff? What's the budget? I saw somewhere that you guys were hiring, which is great. I don't know if you're still hiring, but just, you know, overall information on the staff and, you know, the different deputy public advocates, and how people can get in touch with your office.
Yeah, we have significant powers, and then sometimes we have some that are not as significant as we would like. So we have about between 50 and 60 staff at any one time. Our budget is around $5 million. We actually have a lower budget than most of the borough presidents, which people are surprised to hear. So even though we have citywide impact, we don't have citywide budget. So sometimes we're punching above our weight. As a public advocate, you can kind of define the office in ways, because it's a lot of flexibility. And as you mentioned, Tish James was a great attorney. She focused a lot on legal, and we learned from that as well. As a community organizer, I focused it around organizing and civic, making sure that we have a large part of the office dedicated to making sure information is going up and down from the communities, and also policy and legislation. We have our constituent service department, which answers thousands of calls and closes thousands of cases every single year. We have deputy public advocates, as you mentioned. We have deputy public advocate for housing, for infrastructure, and infrastructure and environmental justice. We have education and opportunity. We have justice and public safety, basically. It's justice and safety. We definitely have some jobs that we are trying to look for now in different departments. And people can go to advocate.nyc.gov. I think it's /hiring, but advocate.nyc.gov has all the information about the office and has contact information. The office is also on social media. You can look up NYC Public Advocate, or you can use my name as well on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I also believe we're on Blue Sky. We're on Blue Sky as well. So we try to cover everything as possible. And there's a lot of issues, you know, as I mentioned, from public safety, which I've been talking about for such a long time. And I wish our party had leaned into a lot more, to education. As I mentioned, public school baby for preschool and masters with Tourette syndrome and ADHD, and a black man with locks who loves hip hop during the Giuliani era, still made it through. And so we try to cover the gamut of issues and try to make sure that we're speaking as a voice for people in this city who are not getting what they need, what they deserve. And like you, I always try to make sure, you know, black immigration is often left out of the conversation. And we try to make sure that's something that's always put back in as well. We want everybody's voice to be heard, listened to, and responded.
Okay. Well, my last and final question for you is, you know, what do you see your next 4 years as public advocate? Like, what, you know, what else do you want to do to improve the lives of New Yorkers?
I'm very concerned about the next 4 years. And I think a lot of New Yorkers are concerned about affordability, about public safety, about our democracy. And that's not hyperbole or exaggeration based on who we have in the White House. And it also depends on who the mayor is. You know, I keep it real. I know a lot of folks think that Cuomo may be the response because of who he is. I'm very concerned about another Cuomo mayoralty. I think having someone who left the executive position in some kind of, you know, drama, it shouldn't replace somebody who's leaving, hopefully, in drama. So, you know, one of those two folks would be look a lot different than if we have Brad Lander, Agent Adams, Zoran, Zelmar. You know, that it looks a lot different. But what I do want to make sure is that there is an independent, strong public advocate who shows a great intersection of being able to be in the streets to raise voices, but actually then go back to the powers and power places and get things done, and understands that the seat you're holding is not about running for re-election. It's not about going high office. The seat I'm holding is not more important than the people I represent. Sometimes the things I'm pushing are not as popular, but they are correct, and I can show you why they're going to be most helpful for the people of the city of New York. And that's why having an independent citywide voice, a citywide elected official, is really important, because it helps you push back when the mayor is doing something or someone else is doing something. And that inevitably is going to come. So my job is, what I'm going to do is work with the mayor to protect New Yorkers, keep them safe, provide a more affordable New York City. When that is not happening, I'm going to call that out and use all the tools of this office to help move it in the right direction.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much for joining me today on Little African News and engaging our community, engaging our diaspora, and letting us know what your future plans are. So thank you, Jumaane.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you so much, everybody listening.
Keep going,
Little African News, and Mona Davis. Peace and blessing, love and light. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.